When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow. What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Yeah, we are back, man. Happy Thursday. Happy Thursday. How y'all feeling?
It's a fact. Welcome back. New addition to the how-to series that we've been doing. This one's a big one as far as how to shop for cars. Mm-hmm. Everything you need to know is leasing, financing, interest rates, you know, used cars, new cars. All that stuff has been a lot that's happened in the car market over the last 5 years, from COVID to post-COVID. And so much stuff. It's been like a rocky road. And, you know, car purchase is one of the biggest purchases that people make several different times throughout the course of their life. Most places in the country, a car is a necessity to be able to function. And it's something that, you know, once again, you never really get educated on.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of like, you know, let's ask your dad some questions or your uncle or something. And, you know, hopefully, you know, make the right decision. You don't really know how to go about it. There's no like education on car buying process, but it is a big thing. It's one of the biggest expenses that most Americans have. So we are bringing an expert on talk about the car business and everything that you need to know as far as buying a car, leasing a car, all the stuff that I just talked about. Somebody that's been in the car business for over 20 years, from salesman to managing dealerships to having his own brokerage. We're clients of his.
Yes.
We actually purchased cars from him. And he's actually the first person that spoke about cars on Earn Your Leisure about 5 years ago. So fitting that we bring him back. So without further ado, Chris Chervet.
What's going on?
Chris, what's going on, my brother?
What's going on?
Everything is good, man. Some of the day ones might recognize Chris. He was part of that Green Wall Brigade, our early days in the dining room. Came and shared a lot of information, man. And obviously, as Shadi said, man, we are clients. So those nice cars that you see us in, you can thank Chris for.
Well, I appreciate you guys trusting me with that, with your car buying process. You know, I'm honored to be able to help you guys out and look forward to continue to do more cars in the future, too.
For sure. So can you just run down your resume? I talked about it, but I think it'd probably be better if it came from you.
Yeah. So I've been in the automotive space for over 20 years, like you said. Started out washing cars early on in the car business, then moved on into sales, into management. And I was fortunate enough to work with some really, really cool people, really talented salespeople and leaders that I had that helped me grow in the automotive industry. And, you know, it's the car business is not something that people grow up, you know, saying, hey, I want to be a car salesman, right? It's kind of one of those things that you end up doing. And I've been fortunate to have a really cool career. I built my business on being knowledgeable, being upfront, and being honest with customers. And that's it. I think if you do business that way, you can really create a really cool client base and a career for yourself. And so, you know, again, things have changed drastically in the last couple of years, especially with the pandemic, with pricing going through the roof, there was inventory shortages. So we had to do some stuff during that time where we had to pivot and kind of structure business differently. So I ended up opening my own brokerage, helping customers buy cars, along with starting a training company for dealerships to help them be able to deliver a higher level of service and being able to connect with their clients and ultimately create a better experience for people when buying a car. So what I wanted to be able to do is help people understand and the people who follow Earn Your Leisure understand how to navigate the process. It is scary. It's challenging. If you go in, and like you said, most people get the information from someone they know, or, you know, a friend that maybe bought a couple of cars, or say, hey, I'll go with you to the dealership, I'll help you do it. But we want to give you some inside information as far as how to make sure you have a smooth, seamless process when you do go buy a car.
Yeah, man, we greatly appreciate you for that. Not only have we become clients, but some of our close friends have become clients as well. And it's one of those things, right? When we see interest rates changing, we see incentives changing, we don't really get the full scope of it, right? A lot of times we don't read the fine line. And so this is one of those times where it's like, we're going to unpack all that so you can make the right decision when you walk inside that dealership.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's get into it. Let's talk about how to shop for cars and go down the whole gambit.
Okay. So yeah, like we said, you know, buying cars is scary, right? So we want to make sure that, one, we create an environment that is where people are informed when going in to buy a vehicle. And this is not just going to help the consumer, but it helps the dealership in the process also. So this is not like trying to put, you know, one against the other, right? That's a big mistake I think people make when they go into a dealership. They go in with their guard up, right? They have that conversation in the car, like, hey, listen, we're only going in to look, right? We're not going to buy anything today. And they kind of like gear up for doing battle. And I think sometimes that can create a pretty challenging experience for both the salesperson and the consumer, right? So one thing I tell people all the time is be open-minded, right? Years ago, things were different. And unfortunately, in some stores, they haven't changed in the sense that salespeople kind of do things like they used to do, and they're looking to get over on people. But for the most part, that's not the case, right? People want to help you buy a car, and you're there to buy one, right? But unfortunately, if we set the tone and we go in aggressively and, like, you know, be confrontational, then what does the salesperson do? He becomes confrontational back. Or sometimes the salesperson's confrontational and you become confrontational. What I would recommend is if you are in a situation where you're at a dealership and for some reason you're not clicking or vibing with the salesperson, listen, you're in control, right? You're the customer. You're there to buy the product. If you're not happy with the experience, feel free to say, hey, listen, you know what? This isn't really, you know, I don't think we're connecting. We're vibing at this time. Can I speak to somebody else? Maybe ask to speak to a manager and ask for another salesperson, not in a confrontational manner, but listen, trust your gut. If you feel you're not having the best experience with the dealership or the salesperson, be comfortable asking for someone else to help you out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I've walked in plenty of dealerships and I actually haven't done that. I've actually just left the dealership because I didn't like the way that the person I first got introduced to inside of the space was conducting business. So yeah, that is true.
So again, that hurts you and the dealership, right? So nobody benefits from that. So I think being, you know, if you're in a restaurant and you're not happy with food, right? You're going to be like, hey, you know what? Just send it back or whatever, or ask for something else, right? So same thing in a car dealership. Understand that's not a bad thing to do that.
Okay. All right. So I know you're big on, you know, being prepared when you walk into the dealership, right? So what does that mean?
So you got to do your research. Going into a dealership and you're not familiar with, let's say, the product or the programs that they have or what a car may go for, right? I have a lot of people that call up for a vehicle and they'll say, hey, I'm looking for this particular car. And then when they get a payment, they're like, whoa, like I had no idea it was going to be that much money, right? Cars have gone up in price, right? Whether you're leasing or financing, interest rates are really high right now. So you want to do some research before you go to the dealership, right? Make sure that there's so many websites, you know, Car Gurus, there's CarMax, all these different places where you can get information nowadays about vehicles. So do your research, you know, compare different vehicles. If you're in the market for, let's say, an SUV, listen, everyone makes a great car nowadays. That's one of the things I think the pandemic did was it opened the mind of the consumer where, let's just say, you know, I've always purchased Mercedes-Benz vehicles, right? And during the pandemic, all of a sudden you saw these crazy increases in prices and people said, wait a minute, let me see what my options are. And then they realized that, hey, there are other brands out there that make great products. So do the research. If you're looking for an SUV, be open-minded to other options. Like I said, be prepared. Read the reviews, you know, check out the quality ratings and things of that nature before going into the dealership.
How important is it to, number one, check resale value before you're going into this process of saying, I'm going to buy or lease a vehicle?
So that's a huge factor, right? Now, that depends if you're going to be leasing or buying the vehicle. Now, on a lease, the resale value is important because the leases are based. So you on a lease, you pay the depreciation, right? Whatever the vehicle loses in value. So if the vehicle has a higher resale value, typically has a higher resale value, that's going to shrink your monthly payment. So that's important. Now, if you're going to be financing a vehicle, same thing. You want to make sure that vehicle holds value. So I tell this story all the time to people. If you're buying two cars, right, there is no right or wrong as far as leasing. Some people ask me all the time, what's better, leasing or financing? To me, it's all based on personal preference. What are you using the vehicle for? How long do you keep the vehicle? Those things play a part. Are you driving a lot of mileage? Things like that. So making sure you understand what the resale value of the vehicle is key, because if you're going to make this long-term investment in financing a vehicle, you want to make sure that it's going to hold its value.
Now, this is important, Chris, because we talked about preparation, and this is coming off the heels of our last how-to, which was understanding your credit score. A lot of people don't realize how important credit is in trying to get a car. So talk about that, like the importance of it. What numbers are the dealerships looking for? How that impacts your interest rates, things like that.
Okay. Big conversation we have with a lot of clients right now about their interest rates. Some people use, like, let's say Credit Karma or, you know, these different apps to kind of see what their what their credit score is. I typically find if you go to Experian, TransUnion, Equifax, you can get a more accurate score than using these other companies, right? So how that works. So the bank looks at it as, all right, I'm going to be lending this person money for a vehicle that essentially the bank is buying, right? The bank is going to buy the vehicle from the dealership. They're going to loan you money and you're going to be paying off that loan to them. So think about it this way. If someone was borrowing money from you and you looked at their credit score, that would kind of give you an indication of how likely they are to pay back that loan. Okay. So now if somebody has a lower credit score or has a payment history that's not, you know, you see they've missed some payments, you may still lend them the money for that car, but you have more risk in the game, right? There's a chance you could see by their history, they may not be apt to paying it back or paying it back on time. So I might give them a higher interest rate. Now that's going to increase their monthly payment. So now I'll tell you, during the pandemic, things changed drastically. But you're starting to see it kind of settle itself out now, where used car rates right now are anywhere between 7 and 14%. Okay. Ooh. New car rates, I've seen as low as, you know, 3.9, 4.9. Last year, Ford had a 0% interest for 36 months on a new car. So that was unheard of, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. Right. So you're starting to see it come back a little bit. So you, again, doing your research, very important. You can go online if there's a particular vehicle you're looking at. You can go online to that company's website. Let's say it is Ford, and you can see what specials they have available, and they'll show you the interest rates. Now, remember, you have to qualify for that. So if you have the credit score needed, then obviously that applies to you. If not, you'll have different tiers that will bring your credit score up.
So before we go to the leasing and financing deep dive, you mentioned used cars and new cars, right? So can you go down that rabbit hole as far as, like, what's the benefits of having a used car versus a new car, or a new car versus a used car?
All right. So there's a lot of, this is a huge question that we get. Should I buy new or should I buy used? One, I'll tell you something. You got to take your ego out of this. Okay. This is a financial decision. I tell people all the time, if you're going to keep a car, let's just say you're going to drive a lot of mileage. When I say a lot of miles, I'm talking about over 20,000 miles a year. And you plan on keeping this car, you know, for a certain amount of time, for, let's say, an extended period of time, it makes sense to buy used. Now, when you are buying used, I recommend that you buy it from the authorized dealer. And here's the reason why. When you're buying the car from an authorized dealer, these vehicles have gone through an inspection. So that dealership, meaning let's just say you're buying a pre-owned Honda, okay? Yes, I can go buy a pre-owned Honda on a side lot, you know, off a neighbor, whatever the case may be. And I may pay a little bit less, but when you're buying it from the dealership, remember, this is a long-term investment. Investment's a tricky word to say when it comes to this, but when you're buying the car from the dealership, now you have the backing. Let's say you're buying it from a Honda dealership. You have the backing of Honda and that dealership to make sure that vehicle has gone through a rigorous inspection, making sure that, you know, everything's working properly, right? You want to make sure the vehicle's certified, right? So it has a certified warranty on it. Normally, that's an extension of the manufacturer's warranty. And in case something goes wrong in the, you know, the first, you know, 3 or 4 months of you driving the vehicle, you can go back to the dealership and say, hey, wait a minute, I just picked up this vehicle, you know, 2-3 months ago, and this is what's wrong with it. And you have that warranty there. When you do buy these cars from these secondhand lots, or, you know, from the person down the street, or your gas station guy, whatever, you lose out on that. So even though you might be saving a little bit money up front, you're probably going to, and I say probably, more than likely, you're going to pay that money back in repairs and things of that nature. So I always recommend, if you are buying used, buy certified pre-owned and buy from the authorized dealer. Now, why would you buy a used vehicle? Like I said, if you're using the vehicle, you're putting a lot of miles on the vehicle. That's to me the most important factor in buying a used vehicle. Now, the problem right now, and what we saw during the pandemic, is used car pricing went through the roof, right? So just to give you an idea, in 2020, the average used car price was around $20,000. In 2022, it was over $30,000 for the same car, same type of vehicle. So prices jumped drastically. You're starting to see that come down a little bit, but it's still much higher than what it was back then. During the pandemic, right before the pandemic, 2019, cars were depreciating of about 3%, right? And in 2021 and 2022, they jumped up 32 to 36%. So it was a very difficult time. This is when people were saying, hey, you know what? I have a lease, and they were selling their leases, or they were getting money back for their cars. But it made it very difficult to buy a vehicle. Believe it or not, some people were actually buying used cars for more than the original price that someone paid for it as a new vehicle. So the market was crazy, but it's starting to settle out a little bit. I think by the end of 2025, you'll see numbers start to come back down, mainly because the new car inventory is starting to come back.
I'm just thinking in my head, you get the used car, you're getting a double at 30,000 at the minimum, double digit interest rate. That's a hefty payment, man. That's a lot.
That's what people don't understand. The interest rate is so important, right? And when you do get a certified vehicle from the dealership, normally that'll come attached with a better interest rate. But used car interest rates right now are in the sevens, you know, 7 to 14% is what I'm seeing. So people don't realize, and this is very important, when you're shopping for a vehicle, you have to do the big math, right? Not just the little math. When the dealership tells you, oh, it's, you know, $80 to $90 or $100 more in the monthly payment, if you're doing a 72-month loan, right, or a six-year finance, that's $7,200 that you're adding in finance charges, right, depending on what your interest rate is, to the price of the car, right? So make sure you're aware of what the interest rate is. Don't just buy based on payment. Does that make sense? Because if the higher the interest rate, when on a simple interest loan, okay, let's get into math, right? On a simple interest loan, which was what every car loan is, right? The bank collects their money first. So you're paying back the interest first. The money that you're making on your payment, let's just say you have a $500 payment. The majority of that payment in the beginning is going towards interest. Very little of that money is going towards your principal. So what's happening is your vehicle is losing value and you're not even touching the principal yet. You're paying all the bank wants their money back first, right? They're not worried about you paying off the car yet. Give me my money. So you're paying off the interest and then you're starting to hit that principal. Around the halfway mark is now when you start to cut into the principal. But what happens is that vehicle is depreciating in value. Not to mention, let's say that vehicle was in an accident. If that car got hit, and now you have a bad Carfax, that dropped the value of the vehicle also. So you're accelerating the depreciation while you're still paying all of this interest. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So before the used car, what about a warranty that comes with the?
So when you get a certified vehicle, those normally come with an extension of the manufacturer's warranty. That's if the vehicle's, you know, still a fairly new car, right? Let's say it's a 2 or 3 year old vehicle. Now you can buy extended warranties And a lot of these secondhand lots, they will send you an extended warranty, but you got to read the fine print. Some of them have deductibles, high deductibles, or they're certain, they only cover certain aspects of the vehicle. So you got to be very careful with those, you know, secondhand warranties. Some of them are great. Don't get me wrong. Some of them are great, but you have to do the, like I said, you have to do the research. You got to read the fine print whenever you're signing these contracts. Yeah, going back to what I was talking about with the interest rate, when you're paying that interest and the vehicle is depreciating, that's how you end up what's called upside down, where you owe more than it's worth, right? You go to the dealership, you go to trade it in, and they go, well, you owe $15,000, but the car is only worth $10,000. So what happens is people take that $5,000, roll it into their next car, and essentially they're paying for that old car in the price of their new car, not to mention they're paying interest on that also. So you have to be very careful with that. You can get into a really bad cycle of rolling negative equity into the next car and the next car and the next car. What I tell people who are in that situation is your best option to end that cycle is to lease a vehicle. Now, what you're going to be paying more because you're going to have to roll that negative equity into the vehicle. You may even have to put some money down on the lease so the bank can look at it as a favorable purchase, right? Meaning, why would the bank give you $40,000for a vehicle that's only worth $30,000, right? They're going to want to see some money down. But at the end of 3 years and you've made that those payments on time, at the end of 3 years, you walk away. Now you're out of that negative equity cycle and your payment's going to be much lower.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up that and the warranty piece because that can get tricky. A lot of times it'll be $50,000. You buy a used car, it already has $36,000. That means you're only 14,000 miles before having to get it extended, then you have it for 6 years, and that extended might go to 100,000. But by the time you finish paying the 6 years, you've passed 100,000. And so those are the type of payments that you can't account for that will come up inside of that deal. But I'm walking
in the warranties work. Warranties work in two ways. Keep in mind, it's mileage and time. So there's a thing, and a lot of people don't know this. There's a thing called data first use. It's called a DOFU, right? Data first use. So your warranty starts from the data first use. Let's say you have a 4-year warranty and you buy the vehicle in November of 2023, right? So that's when your warranty starts. So let's say you have a 4-year warranty. November of 2027 is when your warranty expires. If you come back and say, hey, you know what? Or let's just say you bought a 2024 in 2023, right? Because cars come out early, right? They come out for the next model year. You don't have a 20 till 2028. Let's say you bought a 2024 and has a 4-year warranty, but you bought it in 2023. Your warranty expires November 2027, not in 2028. So you have to keep in mind it's mileage or time, whichever one comes first. You can say, hey, listen, I have a 48,000 mile warranty and I only had my vehicle for, you know, 3 years. If you hit that time, I'm sorry, I've had my vehicle for past the time that the warranty is allowed, you're out of warranty. Doesn't matter if you're under on your mileage.
So I'm walking in the dealership, Chris, right? I've prepared myself. I know my credit score. I've been pre-approved for a certain amount. I've done the research on the vehicle one. I set a budget. But there's a part that doesn't get talked about, and that's finding deals and incentives, right? Incentives are important. A lot of people will see commercials, and they're like, zero, and it's like, no way. You'll read something in a newsprint and you're like, there's no way. And you walk into the dealership and all those things that you heard may not be true. How do we know what's real? How do we know what's not real when trying to file in deals and incentives? And who are some of the makers that you've seen that have had pretty good ones?
So when you see these ads, you got to read the fine print. All right. There's some terminology that we want to look at. That's one of the slides I think we were talking about was money down, all right, or cap cost reduction. All right, so let's say you're leasing the vehicle and you see this ad that says $399 a month, and then the guy talks really fast or there's like fine print, right? You'll find out later on that that's $39.99 down plus taxes and fees. That's what it says in that fine print. So there's a cap cost reduction. That means that's an investment from you to bring that payment down. You don't have to do that. If your credit qualifies, you don't have to put that money down. Again, if your credit qualifies. Truthfully speaking, you don't have to put any money down on the lease if your credit qualifies for it. Now, I don't recommend putting zero, like rolling your first month's payment into the lease. A lot of people will come in and say, oh, I don't want to give anything. I want to do zero due at signing. Zero due at signing means plus your taxes and fees. That means you're still paying your first month's payment, your bank fee. Now your bank fee is what's called, another term is acquisition fee. Your taxes, your first month's payment, your bank fee, your plates and registration. Okay. So that's, if you literally gave like first month's payment, bank fee, plates, taxes, and registration, that's a zero down lease, which kind of people kind of have trouble understanding that, because you're not putting money down on top of it. Now, if you want to roll your taxes into the lease, you can do that, but it's going to increase your monthly payment. So you have to make a decision. Hey, am I okay with putting this money up front, or am I okay with the higher monthly payment? Okay. Now, getting back to what you asked, how do I know what rebates are available to you? You have to ask your dealership and you have to do the research. Now, very important, with the rebates, a lot, they are disclosed in your contract. When you go in to sign your contract with the normally it's a finance manager or somebody at the dealership, you want to make sure you go over it. Don't let them just say, all right, this is your name, that's your payment, that's your money down, sign right here. You want to go over it line by line. There's a paragraph. It's a truth in lending paragraph. Will actually explain to you what the rebates are. It'll tell you what the selling price of the vehicle is, how the amount due at signing came up with if on a lease, and if there's any rebates, that'll be broken out on that line. So you want to make sure you look at that. On a finance, it's a little bit more difficult because it's just a lump sum that you'll see on the contract. But you, again, want to do the research, want to go online. The information is easily accessible when you go online and just search what rebates are available. And you have to make sure you qualify. Things like people who are first responders qualify for a lot of rebates. If the vehicle is let's say a hybrid or an electric vehicle, those are getting big rebates right now. So those, again, you got to do your research, search online, and you can access that information.
Chris, really quick, before we go to the next thing, what's the credit score that banks are looking for? We talked about mortgages. We know like it's a 680. What's the credit score that a good dealership is looking for?
All right. So now, different brands have different tiers, right? So some banks will have like a tier A1 plus, right? That's normally like 750 or 740 or better. For a tier one credit, normally you want to be over 700 for tier one credit. Some banks are 719, depending on the brand. But different brands have different criteria. So like some brands will actually buy like a 650, 660 score. But they'll give you a much higher tier. So that's going to increase your monthly payment. Okay.
All right.
Got it.
So let's go into, big question, how to get a good deal. You know, that's something that people always ask, right? They want to make sure that they are not getting ripped off and they actually, you know, are winning in the situation. So how do you get a good deal?
So it's going to be a combination of all the things we talked about, right? Going in with the right attitude, right? Going in there, you know, prepared, making sure that, you know what vehicle you're looking at and doing the research, shopping around. I'll be honest with you, some people may not like this in the automotive industry, but I'm not afraid of customers shopping around. I'll be honest with you. A customer who comes in knowing the market, it's an easier customer for me because they're educated, right? They know what they're looking for. They're realistic as far as the numbers. You just have to understand how to connect to that person. And that's where I think people fail in the automotive industry. The salespeople fail when a customer comes in and says, hey, listen, I've been shopping around. They're like, oh, you know, their shoulders go down. They get frustrated. To me, I get excited. That means this person is ready to buy the car. They've done all the research. Now I just got to connect my product to their problem. That's it. And if I can do that and build a relationship with my client, they're going to choose me every time. I'm not afraid of customers shopping around. So if you have the opportunity, shop around, make some phone calls, visit dealerships. Unfortunately, some dealerships still do business in a way where they're like, oh, you have to come into the dealership in order for me to give you a number. That to me is silly. I can buy, you know, something on my phone. You can buy a car on your phone. Let's be honest. So I think the dealerships that understand that the speed of the transaction is key, they're going to be more successful in this time with these customers, right? So, hey, give the number up front. Unfortunately, some dealerships will say, hey, this is the price. And then when you get into the dealership, they change the numbers. It's something that, again, it's unfortunate in the industry, but you have to be willing to go into a dealership. And if it's not what they said it was, you have to be open to walking away. That's it. Yeah. Don't fall for the pressure of like, oh, you have to do this now. Or, you know, I had a customer the other day that she said she went to a dealership, and this was a family friend. And she said, she's like calling me in a panic. She's like, they're telling me if I don't do it today, I'm going to lose out on these incentives. I'm going to lose out on this. And I understand the dealership's trying to sell the urgency, but there's a way to go about that. And you don't have to be that type of person where you're, you know, jamming somebody up, or you're like, you know, high pressure sales tactics. I don't like that. I've never done it. I've never done business like that. Now, it's important to know a good deal when you have it in front of them. I tell people all the time, it's important to negotiate a good deal. It's more important to know when you have a good deal. Because believe it or not, as a customer, you can out-negotiate yourself. Meaning, hey, sometimes you may be at the bottom and you just keep going, keep going, keep going. And the dealership says, hey, look, at this point, there's nothing more we can do. You know, we're going to move on from this. And then you feel like, oh, they're gonna come get me. Like, they're going to come grab me, or, you know, and sometimes they do, believe it or not, but sometimes they don't. And there is a chance that you can miss out on an incentive that goes away, because programs change on a month-to-month basis. The car business is a month-to-month industry where incentives and programs come out. Normally, it's every month. Sometimes some brands will change mid-month and put an incentive out there. So it's tricky. I understand why it could be overwhelming for some people. So that's why we kind of do what we do in helping navigate customers through the process.
Yeah, it's good to have somebody like you, because a lot of us, we don't have the greatest negotiating skills. And so for the most part, you know, this is even in investing. Like, we know, hey, I don't want to pay the MSRP or the sticker price per se. So,
well, during the pandemic, people were dying to pay MSRP. During the pandemic, like, if you can get a car MSRP, you were good. Like, that's the only time that customers were coming into the dealership saying, I don't want to pay over MSRP. I'll pay MSRP. When cars were going at $50,000, $100,000 over MSRP for some vehicles.
So what are some things that the average person should know when trying to negotiate against the dealership? I know it feels overwhelming, right? Like, you guys have all the numbers, you know the cars, you know the hidden fees, which we'll get into. What should we know? What are the things that we should be asking as the everyday common folk coming into the dealership?
So, a couple of things. Let's talk about your trade. Okay, this is one tip that I give consumers whenever they have a trade-in vehicle, or family member whenever they have a trade-in vehicle. Now, dealerships may not like this, but again, if you're doing business upfront and you're being honest with customers and you're doing business the right way, you shouldn't have an issue with this. The dealerships who are not going to like this are the dealerships that are playing that shady business game, right? When you go into a dealership and you have a trade-in, and the dealership tells you, hey, your car is worth $20,000, whatever the number is. The next question you should ask is, will you give me that price if I don't buy a car here? Okay. Now, what that does is that keeps the dealership honest. There's a thing what's called over-allowing, right? Let's just say I have room on my new car price, right? Like, I can come down $3,000 or $4,000on a vehicle, but right now I'm at sticker price. And I tell you the car is, you know, I look at the vehicle's value and it's worth 18, but I know you want 20 for it. I say, listen, okay, I'll give you $20,000 for your vehicle if we can do a deal today. And you may say, you know what? Done. Let's do it. Now, the truth is, did you get a really good deal in a new car, or did you get the right number on your trade-in, right? You didn't get either of them. The real number on your car is the $18,000. I tell people all the time, don't be emotionally attached to your trade-in. And I ask customers all the time, you know, are you emotionally attached to your car? And they're like, yeah, I'll be honest with you, I am. Because the value of the vehicle is the value of the vehicle, plain and simple. We don't look at it as like, hey, you raised your kids in that family. We don't look at it like that. We look at it as, hey, there's a value based on your VIN number, the mileage, the condition of your car, and the system's going to put a number on that car based on what they're selling for at this time. That's it. It's nothing personal. Like I said, be more information you have, you can go online, you can go to sites like CarMax or Carvana and punch in your information, and they will give you a number on your car. They will give you a value of your vehicle. Now, everybody's going to look at your vehicle a little bit differently, right? It's like, if I have 10 of those cars on my lot, I may look at it as like, all right, I may have to give them a little bit less so I can help move this vehicle. So those are things you have to factor into the equation. But be open-minded. When you're going into a dealership to buy a car, you want to have a budget in mind, right? Where you need to be, like your comfort zone, where you're, you know, what the max is you're willing to go. But keep that information in your pocket, right? In your back pocket. Don't rush to tell the dealership when the salesperson asks you, well, what's your budget? I don't know yet. I want to see the car. I want to see if it's the right fit for me and my family. And I'd like to get some information. That's the answer. When you come out and you say, hey, my budget's, you know, $500 a month, guess what you did? You just set either the ceiling or the floor for the negotiation, right? So one, I tell salespeople all the time, don't ask that question. Don't ask customers what their budget is. There's no reason to do that. The truth is you want to give your number up front, right? The dealership should be giving you the first number and telling you what the vehicle's going for, and then you start the negotiation. Plain and simple.
What's some tactics that dealerships use to upsell buyers?
Tactics is a tricky word.
Strategies.
So, you know, listen, it's the dealership is there to do business, right? I don't believe in, you know, the dealership is not there to rip you off. And I don't think for the most part, most dealerships are there to rip you off. They're there to sell you a product. Now, whether the product makes sense to you or not, that's the decision you have to make, right? Like rim and tire protection. You guys have cars and that some of them may need rim and tire protection. Some of them may not. You have to determine if it makes sense. Let's say, you know, on certain vehicles, let's say you have a vehicle that has a nicer rim or more expensive rim and tire. The rim and tire insurance is going to be higher. Let's just say it's, you know, $2,000 to $3,000 for it. You have to ask yourself, well, wait a minute. If the tire is 18, the rim and tire is, you know, $1,800 for a rim and tire. How many flat tires am I going to have before this kind of pays off? It may be just two. And you know that based on where you live and how you drive, you've had 12 flat tires in the last year. Tire insurance is a great investment. Ding and dent protection are things that, you know, can be sold. These are aftermarket items, right, that the dealership may sell you. If you're someone who, you know, your car gets beat up during your lease and at the end of the lease, you don't want to have that big bill, that may be something you want to consider. The warranty. If you plan on keeping this car a long time, you may want to buy that additional warranty up front. Now, again, doing your research, finding out what those warranties should be selling for, maybe even if you can get them outside, sometimes you can get them outside or after the fact, you can look into that. But the dealership is not there, and I should say shouldn't be there, to rip you off. I'll be honest with you, I can't stand when dealerships do that because it gives me a bad rap, right? That's the industry I'm in. So when people or dealerships or taking advantage of consumers, that really aggravates me. Like, there's no reason to do that. If you do business, like I said, if you're honest, you're upfront, and you're knowledgeable, you can make plenty of money in the industry. Because if you take care of people, they'll send them to you. They'll send their friends and family to you, as you guys have, right? You guys, I've sold cars to multiple family members of yours because I think you know that, hey, one, I'm knowledgeable, and I've never had to hide my face in a restaurant because I saw a customer that I took advantage of. I don't have to do that. On the contrary, I have customers send me over a bottle of wine when I'm sitting in a restaurant because they saw me and they're like, oh, that's the guy who hooked me up with my car, right? So do business the right way. It's a long-term business. This, I would put this out there for any young salespeople who are in the industry. This is a long-term career, all right? The industry can create you an incredible life. I have wife, beautiful kids, and it's all because of the car business. You guys know I'm a GED student, right? We're going to get off the topic a little bit. I'm a GED student. I grew up East New York, Brooklyn, Queens area, and immigrant parents, worked hard my whole life. Had a kid when I was having a baby at 19 years old, 20 years old, had a baby. And I got into the car business. And when I did, I said, you know what? I'm going to be honest, be upfront, and be knowledgeable, take care of my clients. And the first customer I ever sold a car to, he still buys cars from me today. 20 something years ago, you know, some of my best friends in this world are people that I met through selling them cars. And it's a great career if you do it the right way. So that's why I say when some of these dealerships that do underhanded business or sleazy business, shame on them because they make it bad for everybody else. And this is why we have to have these kind of calls. So
yeah, sorry, it's important, man. You know, you're speaking the language, man. I've sat in that finance manager's office a few times after you've signed your lease, and then it's like, wait, you know, here comes the dink and dunk insurance and the windshield protector insurance and the rim insurance and then your power mats. And I'm like, yo, do we really need all this? And you end up using none of it. And you're like, why did I do that? Next time I'm not going to. Next time happens and you do it again.
So that's just it, is when I talk about being prepared and going in there, you know, and checking your ego, right? Your emotions also, like, it's a car. Okay. Like, it's a car. So listen, all weather mats. Yeah. Get the all weather mats, especially if your car gets dirty, you're getting in and out of the car, get the all weather mats. It makes sense. Now, you know, as far as other items, don't feel like you're being gent up. And the biggest thing is, don't be afraid to get up and walk away. Don't feel like, hey, I've already sat here for 6 hours. You know, it's only $20 a month more. Like, if it's something you don't need, don't be afraid to say, hey, listen, you know what? This is now getting a little bit overwhelming. I think I'm going to go. I'll come back in another time and see how the situation changes. So again, some dealerships are not going to like this conversation, but I'll be honest with you. I think it's necessary for them and for the consumer.
You talked about some of the hidden fees that'll sneak up on us. One of the things in the lease is there's an early termination fee. And then there's a fee at the end of your lease. Talk about that, because I don't think people go into it. They say, I'm going to do this lease. I'm going to do it for 36 months, 39 months. And they don't take into account for some of the other things that they're going to pay when the lease is over.
So it's not a hidden fee. It's actually on your contract. The disposition fee is on the contract. The disposition fee is a fee to turn the vehicle back in. It's basically for processing the end of your lease termination, right? They have to close out the account. They have to pick up the vehicle, things of the nature, right? So, and it's spelled out. It's anywhere between $395 to $595, but there's a box on the top of the contract that will say disposition fee. Again, this is why I said it's important to not just have the person who's signing you out to say, hey, this is your payment, that's your VIN number, sign right here. That's not how it works. I want to go over the contract. Now, you don't have to read the back of it. Those are typical. I mean, those contracts are basically the same for every lease, but as long as you're going over the numbers, like, how many miles per year am I getting? That's huge. I can't tell you how many people have told me, well, the dealership told me I was getting 12,000 miles a year, but my contract says 10. Well, did you ask them when you signed it? Well, no, I didn't. I just signed. Stop it. This is a big purchase. Take the time to read the contract. Make sure it's exactly what you expected, okay? And again, don't be afraid to get up and say, hey, listen, you know what? This is not what we talked about. I'm going to, maybe I'll come back. If that makes sense, sorry.
All right, so let's have this deep dive into this conversation about leasing and financing. I know we talked about it briefly, but yeah, that's a question that people always ask all the time.
So again, personal preference. This is all based on your personal experience and what you need the vehicle for. Right? There is no right or wrong, leasing or financing. You know, some people, I get a lot of people that say, "Well, I drive too many miles a year to lease." I personally think that if you are doing more mileage, let's say 15, 18,000 miles a year, you are better off, and you want a new car, right? You are better off leasing the vehicle. I know this is contrary to what most people will tell you. Now, you can do leases that are, some banks even offer 7,500 miles a year, 10,000, 12,000, 15, 18, 20,000 mile a year leases. Once you get into that 20,000 mile a year lease or over that, normally the residual value, so the estimated value of the vehicle at the end of that lease, drops significantly. Right? Because the vehicle is going to have a lot of mileage and the bank understands, hey, this car is not going to be worth much when it comes back. So they're going to drop that residual value. And remember, you're paying on the depreciation, the difference between the selling price and the residual. So your payments are going to be higher, but you're using the car more. And yes, it is like renting a car. Okay. People say, oh, it's like renting a car. I never own it. Well, you don't own, we talked about this last time. You don't own the car when you finance it. Right? When you have a 72-month finance, you don't own that car until you make that last payment. And guess what? Most people never get to that point where they make the last payment. Either they trade it in early or they sell the vehicle, or the vehicle's totaled. So the truth is you never own the car anywhere. On a lease, when you are doing that high mileage, so I ask this question. If you were doing your mortgage, would you want an adjustable rate mortgage or a fixed rate mortgage?
Fixed rate.
Why?
Because I know it's going to be the same payment consistently throughout the term of the lease.
Same thing on the lease, right? On the lease, it's like having a fixed rate mortgage. I know what my true cost of ownership is. Meaning, if I'm putting 15,000 miles a year on my lease, and my friend is putting 15,000 miles a year on their finance, the depreciation of that vehicle is going to be accelerated because we're driving the cars more, right? I don't really care that it's being accelerated because I just know what my payments are going to be every month. I know I'm going to have X amount of services due between those 3 years or however long I lease my car. This person, my friend, has to worry about, hey, what is my car worth now? And you really never know. It's all a guess, right? Especially if something happens with the vehicle, a new model comes out, maybe the technology is improved in the vehicle, right? So their value of the vehicle, that's something they have to be concerned with. I don't have to be concerned with that because I know at the end of my 3 years, I'm just going to give the car back and get another one. And not to mention, when you're financing the vehicle, you're financing the entire price of the car, okay? Plus tax on the entire price of the car. On a lease, you're only paying the depreciation and you're only paying tax on the lease portion. Now, this varies from state to state. Some states will have you pay taxes on the whole vehicle. Some states like New York, it's based on the monthly payment times the term. So let's say it's 36 months. So let's just say the payment's 500 times 36 months times whatever your tax rate is in that state. That's how much you pay in taxes. So there are benefits to leasing when you are doing a lot of mileage. The other thing is if you are using it for business purposes, people don't understand that you don't necessarily have to put the vehicle in your name, in your company name. If you are, let's say the vehicle's under 6,000 pounds, you can still write that vehicle off, but you're writing it off differently. You're writing off your mileage usage, things of the nature. So you got to be very careful with that. You have to track it. You have to be accurate with it. Because last thing you want to do is if you get audited, they will come check. Hey, what are you using? You know, where's your logs as far as your mileage? Where were you going that you're tracking this? If you're going to deduct 100% of your mileage, you got to be able to show that that's what you use the vehicle for. A lot of people don't know that. You have to be very careful with the new laws. I know that's something you want to talk about, the new laws as far as tax incentives. Those have changed drastically. So again, financing is great for some people. If you plan on keeping the car, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, and you know historically you drive the car and you run it into the ground or you give it to your kids or whoever it is. If you do buy the car and they do have really good interest rates, I would say that's a good reason to do it. But if you normally ask people how often do you change cars, and they're like, oh, every 3 to 4 years. But I don't like to lease. I'm like, well, you kind of are leasing, but you know, you're financing and then just, you know, rolling negative equity into the new car. So you're better off leasing up front.
Yeah, Chris, let's talk about that. And I think probably 2021, and shout out to Miss Business, we talked about the 6,000 pound rule and how you can write off 100% towards if it's in your business name. But that's changed. And this is something that I discovered when we were trying to get a car maybe a year ago, and I was looking for that same 6,000 pound rule. It went from 100% 1 year. I know in 2026, it goes down to 80%. And then by 2029, it phases out. Like, you won't be able to use that same tax incentive. So we actually did a different strategy this year with the car and said, all right, we're going to lease it and we're going to go EV. Talk about the differences in incentives of using your business for the tax incentive and getting a vehicle.
So let's be clear. I'm not a tax attorney or an accountant. So you definitely want to speak to whoever your accountant is. And you did this too. Speak to your accountant before. If this is, you know, one of the factors in you buying a car, make sure you speak to your accountant. Look up the information. And like I said, be prepared when you are doing this. Because what I'm seeing, and I looked on the IRS website. There's another website called section179.org. And they talk about it where vehicles, from my understanding now, they've dropped it to the amount that you can write off is also based on your usage. So the vehicle has to be used for 50%. I'm sorry, over 50% of the usage has to be for business in order for you to write it off. And again, this, if you get audited, they're going to come and they want to see those logs as far as how you're using that vehicle, right? And from my understanding, the limit now for 2025 is the section 179 deduction is $31,300 for vehicles that are over 75,000 and greater than 6,000 pounds. Okay. So now here's how it works. If you're only using that vehicle for 40% of the usage is being used for business, then you can only write off that 40%. It's not the whole vehicle anymore, like it used to be. So again, very important that you're looking at that. Vehicles under 6,000 pounds. So let's say your personal vehicle, if you're, you know, you're not using a heavy duty vehicle, you're not using those big SUVs, you can still write them off. But that number changed for 2025 to 20,400, as long as the vehicle is being used for primarily for business uses. Again, not a tax attorney, not an accountant. Definitely want to speak to your accountant and to make sure you're in line, because this is one thing you don't want to mess with when it comes to the IRS. You know, to go buy a Bentley. Another thing that I found out as a factor is your company has to show at least the income, the taxable income for that year has to be over the amount of the vehicle. So you have to keep that in mind. These are a lot of factors. You know, to buy a Bentley because you have a company and you're showing on your tax returns that you only made $60,000-$70,000, you know, it's not going to work out that way. It's not going to work out well for you.
Talk about the EV incentive.
Yeah, EVs are great opportunities for incentives for people who are looking for tax savings. You know, in New York, there was a $7,500 rebate. Again, that's starting to change based on the supply and demand of EV vehicles. In New Jersey, at one point, if you registered an electric vehicle in the state of New Jersey, you didn't pay tax at all, sales tax on the vehicle. Now that's changed. Now I think it's about 50%. You would pay of your tax revenue. I think it's up to $3,500. But again, this is a moving target. This is something that continues to change. So you have to do the research.
All right, let's go to the trade-in value of cars.
Again, when it comes to trade-ins, I recommend do your research online. Don't be emotionally attached to your car. Okay, if you are emotionally attached to your car, keep it or give it to somebody in the family who can use it and benefit from it, especially if there's not a lot of value in it. But if it is something you want to trade in, do your research first. Go on CarMax, Carfax, Carvana, these websites, and they'll actually, if you punch in your license plate, your VIN number, your mileage, and be honest about the condition of the vehicle, right? Don't put on there that your vehicle is, you know, excellent condition when it's, you know, had some accidents, or you smoke cigarettes in the car, or, you know, your dog is ripped up the back seat. I've seen crazy things and people like, oh, no, that's nothing. Okay, yeah, it is. It's your dog ripped up the back seat of the car. So be honest on these things. And that's going to give you an idea as far as what the value of your car is. Don't go by what they're selling for, because a lot of customers will do that. They're like, well, I see that they're selling for X amount of dollars at other dealerships. That is totally irrelevant to you. Okay, because one, you don't know what the dealership, one, had to pay for that car. Meaning if they bought the car and it's been sitting on their lot, maybe they bought it when the values were higher and now the values have come down. So even though the customer may be asking for a certain amount for a car, that doesn't mean they're going to get that value for the car, right? The customer is going to come in and want to negotiate it. And maybe after, you know, the couple of months of that car sitting in the lot, they may take a loss on that vehicle. Believe it or not, dealerships do take losses. For some reason, people don't want to believe that a dealership is ever going to take a loss. It does happen. But don't go by what the cars are listed for online. That is not the value of your vehicle. Now, if you want to go and sell the car to somebody and, you know, have people come into your house and test driving the car and waiting for people to come bring a check for the car, then you can try to list it for that price online. But truth be told, if a customer is going to be spending that amount of money for a vehicle, they're probably more likely to go to a dealership where the dealership can offer them financing, warranties, and things of that nature. So again, don't be emotionally attached to your car. Do the research online. When you go to the dealership, remember that very important question. Once you do mention that you have a trade and the dealership does give you a number, so important to ask the question, hey, quick question. If I don't buy a car here, will you still give me that number for my car? Like, will you write me a check for that car? If the dealership says no, say, okay, how much will you write me a check for if I give you that car right now and I don't buy another car from you today? That's the real number for your car.
What's the cars that depreciate the fastest, and what's the cars that hold their value the most?
So cars that depreciate very quickly, cars with accidents, Carfax, things of that nature, that's the first one, right? Now, there's different brands that don't hold value and cars that do hold value, right? Believe it or not, Toyotas, Hondas, those hold incredible value. Even now, we're seeing it where the value of those vehicles, don't just think it's just Mercedes-Benz. Some of the Mercedes-Benz vehicles drop in value very quickly. But typically those, you know, again, this is something you can do research on. Lexus vehicles hold great value. Mercedes-Benz does, BMWs do. Again, you want to do the research and kind of check into what the vehicles are selling for compared to what, and this is very easy to access this information. You can Google, like, you know, highest value vehicles or vehicles that hold their value. So it's a tricky situation. Porsche holds incredible value. Like, I recommend some of my big clients to, you know, that are looking for cars. If you're looking for something that's going to hold value and you're going to keep it for a while, some Porsches, you can actually, you know, buy them and then they'll actually increase in value. So, but yeah, that's what you want to do. You want to do the research, look online, see what cars, like Nissans, are dropping in value. Some other cars, you know, the Volkswagens typically hold good value, but yeah, again, we want to do the research and check online.
Because I've always wondered this, right? Like, we don't want to get lowballed if we're doing a trade-in. But what happens with when? What does the dealership do, right? Like, let's just hypothetically, I have a 2016 BMW. I'm trading it in because I'm getting a new car. They're not going to put that on their lot. It's kind of outdated for their certified pre-owned situation. So where does that model go? Where does my car go?
So great question. So a lot of these dealerships will work with wholesalers who will buy the cars from them. Okay. So that's where those cars will end up. Or they, you know, maybe they have a dealership in their group that sells used cars. Believe it or not, sometimes a dealership, and I always recommend this to the dealerships, if you have a nice car, even if it's, you know, a car that's not in my lineup, right? I'd say, hey, listen, hold on to it, put it on the lot. If it's a clean car, it's a nice car. You may have a client who may be looking for a second vehicle or a vehicle for their kids, so they may hold on to it. But normally it goes to wholesalers who are willing to write the check for the car.
Here's another sneaky one, and this is kind of like the exit row, right? Like, I know Shadi talks about when we couldn't get first class, you sit in the exit row because, you know, you got some leg room. Talk about the people who actually buy the test drive cars, because they have been used. It's relatively new and in great condition. Is that a strategy that you can use going into a dealership?
I'm going to tell you something. So those are called demos, right? I bought demos. My cars, whenever I leased a car from me or my wife, I took demos. Because those cars are, a lot of times they're written down, meaning every month when they put a car into, let's say, demo status or loaner service, or one of the managers is driving the car, normally those cars are written down. So there's a cost factor to having that done, and you own the car for a little bit less, so you can take advantage of some savings. If you're not particular as far as like, hey, I want this car with this feature and this color and this interior, if you're open to it and you want a deal, once you've negotiated, say, hey, listen, let me ask you a question. Do you have any demos that can help me save some money? Dealerships want to move those cars, right? So that's definitely a great way to save money. The cars you still have, now mind you, going back to what I said as far as data first use, this is great for leasing. If you're buying it, remember, the data first use is when that car went into service. So when that car started being used, and let's say the dealership registered it as a loaner vehicle, that data first use, so that the time, the clock on that warranty may have already started. So you want to ask this question, hey, how much time do I have left on that car? Because if that car has been in service for over a year, you may be losing out on a year of warranty on the vehicle. And again, monetarily, it still may make sense to take it, especially if you're leasing the vehicle. But that's a great option. I recommend that all the time. Again, a lot of my cars, if I could save some money, I've driven all kinds of cars in my life. So at this point, I want something that's reliable, safe for me, my family, and drives nice. I don't want to have to worry about it. So if I can save some money and get the exit row instead of first class, then I guess I'll be in the exit row.
We're going to the same place.
What about, you know, the whole plane is going to the same place, but first class is nice. I'm not going to lie.
What about dealership language?
Say again?
Dealership language.
So terminology in the dealership, things like when I mentioned earlier, over allowing, right? Residual value, the estimated value of the vehicle at the end of the lease, cap cost reduction. The cap cost reduction, you'll see that it actually says capitalized cost on your contract. That is what the vehicle is being sold for, the cap cost of the vehicle. A cap cost reduction is money to reduce that cap cost, right? So these are things you want to look at when you're inside the dealership. Over allowance, when they're over allowing for your trade, meaning maybe there's money in the new car that they're using to to show you a higher value for your trade-in vehicle. Things like that you want to make sure you're mindful of. I'm hearing a lot of people use the term smart lease. Smart leases are, you know, I had two customers last month that called up and they said, my lease is up. And come to find out, they had what's called a balloon loan. So a balloon loan, I guess somebody pitched it as a lease. It's not technically a lease. It's a finance of the vehicle. But at the end of that finance, there's this balloon payment, like a lump sum payment that you have to make, or you can give the car back. But you're buying the whole vehicle. You're paying tax on the whole vehicle. It's just, you have to be very careful with the terminology the dealership's using. Make sure you read your contracts. If there's something you don't understand, don't be afraid to stop and say, hey, what is that? And then open up your phone and Google it. Like, it's just search the information. You're in control as the consumer, right? And you have to make sure that, not to be confrontational, but you have to let people know, hey, wait a second, I don't understand that. I need, you know, better clarity on that.
Yeah, obviously I've gotten the last few cars from you, but there were some dealerships, and I don't know if they still use this, the OTD, the out the door price. Can you talk about what that is, man?
So that's your total. Like,
they know that, and I don't know that, but I need to know that.
That's what dealerships shouldn't be using this term. It's I don't know. This is one of the things we teach in our training, is speak the customer's language, right? Not the internal language that we use, right? Like, if I said to you, you know, that's tissue on the car. I've heard salespeople say to customers, and dealerships are going to hear this. If they hear this, and they're going to be like, yeah, we do that. If a dealership said, hey, well, listen, I'm selling you the car at tissue, would you know what that means?
No.
Okay. So why use that terminology? Tissue is like the cost of the vehicle, right? That's like what their invoice is on the vehicle, right? Or their cost. But why use that terminology? OTD, or out the door price, that means including, and it should mean, because you don't want to come back and then it changes, the out the door price is the price of the vehicle plus any taxes, fees, motor vehicle. That's the total amount. And this is what I tell people all the time. Make sure you say, if you're leaving a dealership and, you know, they tell you, all right, you're giving $5,000 down. Say, hey, quick question. Is that the total amount that I have to give you at signing? Okay, that's the out the door price. Is that the total number that I will be writing a check for? Let's say I'm paying it cash. Is that the total amount that I have to bring you a check for? Or are there any additional fees? And they say, no, that's the out the door price. That's the out the door price.
All right, this is a term, unfortunately, one of my close friends, and you know this person as well, got into an accident, right? But they had what they call gap insurance. Can you talk about that?
Huge, very important. Now, gap insurance is very, I can't tell you how important it is to have in your vehicle. Most New York State leases have gap insurance. It's part of the acquisition fee. It's normally factored into the acquisition fee, which is the bank fee you pay up front. Now, let's say your vehicle, you buy your car, it's $35,000, or you lease your vehicle, it's $35,000. And halfway through the lease, the vehicle gets totaled and you owe the bank, let's say $20,000, but the book value has dropped and the book value is now $17,000. The insurance company will pay the $17,000 because that's the value of the vehicle. What you need is the gap insurance to kick in and pay the difference. All right. Any money owed on top is covered on top of what the insurance company deems the vehicle's valued at, is gap insurance should cover. Now, very important, when you're financing a car, all right, dealerships will ask you if you want to purchase gap insurance. Gap insurance can range, you know, roughly in that $500 range, and, you know, depending on how much they're selling it for. But if you're buying a vehicle and you're not putting any money down, I can't tell you how important it is to make sure you get gap insurance. Because if that vehicle is totaled or stolen and not recovered, the insurance company is going to pay the bank what the value of the vehicle is, not what you owe. Okay, I want to be clear with that. They will pay the value of the vehicle, not what you owe. If you don't have gap insurance, you're on the hook for that negative equity. And trust me, you're not going to want to pay money for a car that you don't have anymore. Nobody does. But you're on the hook for it, and it'll be on your credit if you don't pay it.
Is it better to finance through a dealership or a third party?
Great question. So I encourage people, like some, a lot of people, if they're members of federal credit unions or, you know, let's say they're a teacher or something like that, check what their interest rates are. Check what their interest rates are. See what you qualify for. Make sure you know the parameters, because some credit unions will tell you, hey, we'll finance you up to X amount of dollars. But let's say the car you're actually buying is a couple of dollars over that, then you want to, you're going to have to come up with money out of pocket for that, right? Sometimes credit unions have great interest rates, especially if you're an employee. You know, if they're taking the funds right out of your paycheck, right, they may give you a better interest rate. But find out what the interest rate is. A lot of dealerships are actually set up with credit unions. So they have that option as a bank to use and go to and say and process the loan through them. And it's the same as going through the credit union, right? They're set up with them to do the loan directly with them. So have that information, have all the parameters in place, and then you can go to the dealership and say, hey, listen, you know, what's your best rate that you can give me on this loan? Keep that information in your back pocket. And if they say, well, I can get you 6.49%. Okay, my bank got me 5%. Do you want to try to match it, beat it? How do you want to work it out? Sometimes they're willing to say, hey, you know what? Maybe we're set up with that bank, or maybe let me see if there's another bank that can give me a better rate. So like I said, keep the information in your back pocket. When you are negotiating, when you are in that office, that finance office, and you're going over interest rate, things of that nature, that's when you want to bring that information up and say, hey, listen, this is the rate that I have from my credit union. What can you do? Again, get their rate first, mm-hmm. right? Get their rate first from the dealership. And then you can say, hey, this is what I've got.
I actually did that with, I think my second car. It was a used car. And so I got the price for it. I was like, okay, I'm not going to use you to try to buy this car. I actually had the credit union purchase it. They had a lower interest rate. And obviously when you work with a credit union, it could come directly out of your paycheck. It could come out monthly or biweekly. So you're not even thinking about it. It almost became like another bill that was coming out of your paycheck.
Yep.
But I got a lower interest rate for a longer term. So that's a good strategy.
If you can, it could definitely save you some money.
Yeah. We talked about if we're going to lease the car and potentially, you know, you hear zero down. This feels almost like the home buying process in a sense where, like, what is the amount or down payment that I should have or think about allocating if I'm going to finance a vehicle? Like, is it 10%? Is it 20%? Like, traditionally, what puts me in the best shape, or is this conditional?
So I always recommend at least 10% down on the vehicle. Just your taxes alone, right? Or let's say you're in New York, 8.5%, right? 8.875% is your taxes, right, on the vehicle. So you at least want to cover your taxes and the motor vehicle fees. Again, people don't realize that. Now, if you have it available to you, right? If you can put the money down and get yourself a lower interest rate, because sometimes the bank will, if you're financing a certain amount, they may give you a lower interest rate. Or if you're financing for a shorter term, people don't realize that. You get a better interest rate if you do a 36-month finance opposed to a 48 or 60-month or 72-month finance. So because there's less risk to the bank, right? So that I mentioned earlier that 0% interest rate with Ford, that was for 36 months. So the client that was working with me, they were like, yeah, I'll, you know, instead of writing a check, they were actually first thinking about buying the car cash and writing a check. And they're like, wait a minute. I can get 0%. Yeah, I'll just do 0% for 36 months, keep the money in my pocket and make the monthly payments and pay it off early. So keep that in mind. But yeah, I recommend 10%. The more money you could put down, the lower your monthly payments are going to be on a finance. On a lease, a little bit different. I don't believe in putting a lot of money down on a lease. During the pandemic, when prices were really high, I did my taxes and fees up front. All right. Now, if you're working within a certain budget and you want a particular car, that's the car you want, then you may want to put a couple of dollars down on the lease in order to bring your payment down. People are like, oh, well, you lose that money. Well, no, you're kind of getting it back in the sense that the payment is lower. Right. So you're not technically losing the money.
So before we wrap, first time home buyer, first time
car buyer.
Yeah. Any info for the first people that's, you know, just buying a car, young people?
So it's an exciting time. Enjoy it, right? Again, be prepared, get your information, and don't make it an emotional purchase. Let it be emotional after you buy the car. Does that make sense? right? Mm-hmm. Like enjoy it and do the whole celebrating after you buy the car. But while you're in the process, so I see a lot of, you know, younger folks that are coming in to buy cars. They're so excited about the car is they lose sight of the finances, the financial side of it. And then they make a bad decision. Okay. And that's how they get hurt. Don't be afraid just because you love the car. I've seen people crying in dealerships because they, you know, it was too much or, you know, whatever the case, or they didn't have the money down or they didn't get approved for the car. It's a car. Okay. Stop it. All right. It, just slow things down. It's still going to get you where you want to be. You don't want to, you know, strap yourself into a payment that maybe you're going to have a hard time paying. And then you're affecting your credit down the line. There's more important things to do with your credit than, you know, worrying about what your car is. So don't be emotional in the process. Be okay with walking away. There will be another car that maybe works for you or works within the budget. But for the first time buyer, test drive vehicles, go out, look at different cars. Everybody makes a great car nowadays. So if you see a car on the road that you're absolutely in love with and you're like, mom and dad or whoever it is, I want to get that car, be okay with maybe waiting a little while for that vehicle and maybe getting something else now that is maybe more reasonable as far as monthly payment, more comfortable as far as monthly payment. Hey, listen, if you can afford that car, if it's well within the budget, go for it. But don't be afraid to say, hey, let me just take a step back and look at the bigger picture and make the right decision for myself financially. I see a lot of younger people, first-time buyers getting into vehicles because they're buying with their eyes instead of with their wallet. If that makes sense.
All right. Our last thing here is the end of the lease guide. So we talked about some of those fees that come inside the contract for the lease, but this has happened a few times, right? Let's say I have a 36 month lease. I have 12,000 miles. I'm about to turn the car back in, but I've only driven 18,000 or 20,000. Is there any type of incentive that I get paid back, or what happens with the mileage I don't use? A lot of people run into this issue and it's like, well, what do I do now? I kind of overshot it. Is it just, hey, get less next time, or are dealerships offering things to customers who actually go under the value of mileage that they paid for?
Okay. So very few, I know BMW, I think used to do this a while back where they would give you some money back for unused mileage. I don't know if they do it anymore. This will all be in the contract. Definitely a question you can ask the dealership up front. Now, there are some brands, I know Infiniti does it now, where if you start to do more mileage than you thought you were going to do, let's say you do the 10,000 mile a year lease and you realize, wait, I'm way over, you can buy additional mileage at the same price as you would have purchased it up front during the lease. So again, I know Infiniti does it right now. This doesn't mean they have to continue to do it. If you go on their website, you can see it. I actually have an Infiniti now, and I realized that we were going to go over mileage, and I looked at it, and on their website, it says you can buy the mileage up front. You can buy the mileage during the lease up until, I think it's 30 days before the lease expires. So you have to be careful of when you do it. Don't do it like the day before you give your car back. It's not going to work. So what I tell people all the time is look at what your driving habits are, right? Look at your current car, what you've been driving it over the last 3 years, how many miles have you put on the vehicle? If you anticipate your mileage is going to stay the same, then that's what you should base it off of. Okay. I tell people all the time, it's better to do a 10,000 mile a year lease if you think you may do 11,000 miles a year, if you think you may do 11,000 miles a year, than to do a 12,000 mile a year lease, because you're definitely paying for 12,000 miles a year, right? It to me, I'd rather save the money, keep it in my pocket, and maybe I get out of my car 3 to 6 months early. Right. Let's say your 36 month lease. You have a 36 month lease and you have 12,000 miles a year. That's 1,000 miles a month or 12,000 miles a year. Now, remember, you're not allowed 12,000 miles per year. You're allowed 36,000 total miles in the vehicle when you return it. Now, if I return my car in 30 months with 36,000 miles, there is no penalty to me. OK, so I'm not over mileage. I'm not supposed to be at 30,000 miles because I get my car in early. I'm allowed the 36,000 miles, even if I give the car back early. So that's a lot of times a dealership would do that. If you see you're about to go over mileage, contact the dealership. Some brands, like right now, Mercedes-Benz has what's called a pull ahead. If you're going into another Mercedes, they will waive, I think it's anywhere from 3 to 5 remaining payments on your car, right? You don't want to have to roll those payments into the next car. So you want to, you know, kind of ask the dealership the question, like, do you guys have a pull ahead? I don't want to roll that negative, those other payments into my next car. But I always say, if you think you may go over, do the lower mileage amount. Because it's better to maybe have to pay it than to definitely have to pay it and not have used it.
No, valuable information.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that.
Before we wrap, tell the people what you have going on as far as your company and service and contact information and all that type stuff.
So, like I said, during the pandemic, when I left the retail side of it, when we first did the call, I was working at Mercedes-Benz. I left the industry to start a training company for the automotive salespeople to help them better connect with clients and make the process easier for not just for them, but for the client as well, and to build that long-term career. Obviously, the pandemic hit. Nobody was investing in training at that time. So I kind of had to pivot, and it's kind of it goes to what I teach, right? The clients who had sold cars to started reaching out to me for cars. So I just basically help customers buy vehicles. So we started a company to basically help customers navigate the process of buying the vehicle, make the process super easy. But we still have our training company, which is obviously picking up and doing very well, thank God. But I will tell you this, if you do have questions, my company's Automotive Mentorship, we do sales training and job placement for people in the industry. We do leadership training, every aspect of the automotive industry, which is done very well. What I'm going to do for the members of EYL, I'm going to add an email to our website, and it's going to be deals@automotivementorship.com. So if you have questions about buying a vehicle, they'll be able to contact us, send us an email. We'll do our best. Obviously, depending on the amount of emails that we get, we will do our best. Me and my team will do our best to get back to everybody and answer as many questions as we can. Obviously, when you guys post this, if there's questions, even on the last video, I make sure I still go back. When people do have questions, I try to answer as many questions as I can on that video.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
My God.
I said, always a wealth of information, and it definitely is another option as far as buying a car to use a broker as opposed to a dealership. We didn't talk about that, but that's something that you might want to consider if you're in the car buying process, as far as, you know, not having to go to 10 different dealerships, just having a broker that can actually service all types of cars. And Chris, that's what, you know, kind of what he does. But make sure you guys email that email address. What's the email again?
deals@automotivementorship.com.
deals@automotivementorship.com. All right, Chris, thank you. Appreciate it.
My God, appreciate you as always.
Thank you, guys.
All right, guys. That's it. Take care.
Peace.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.